Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 384, and we're going to continue with the laws of clean and unclean in Deuteronomy 14 and verse 10. Moses basically tells them, and whatsoever has not fins and scales you shall not eat, speaking about things which are in the water. So God gave them basically the instructions of what clean food in terms of things on the land and things in the water and things in the air to eat and what things not to eat. And all those things were given to them with the stipulation that if they eat what God told them to eat, they will be holy, and if they don't, they will be unholy. And for people of another religion, that's basically what they are, another religion, it's not the religion of God, it's not the religion of Christ, it's not the religion of the apostles, to claim we can eat all the unclean things in the world and still be holy, well, obviously they're liars. And they're going to appear before Jesus Christ, and they're going to find out the rude way, you know, the hard way, that they've been lied to all this time. And actually, they were unclean all this time, and therefore, really, didn't have any relationship with Him. Because God made it very plain, as He said to His own people, that when you go to war, for example, even in at that time, your camp must be holy, clean. You see, and if you need to go to the bathroom, well, you go do it outside. And you take a shovel with you and a pail. You know, you dig a hole and stick it in there. And you give them the reason for it. Because He said, I'm walking among you. And so, literally, their God, the one that became Jesus Christ, He walks around. He comes down on the earth and He just walks this way and that way. He's listening to people, seeing what their attitude is all about. You see? And so that's what He told them. I'm walking around there, and if I come, you know, sort of turn around the corner and I see somebody that did it out there, you know, right next to his tent, didn't cover it up. He says, I'm going to take off. This camp is not clean. I'm not going to be among you. And so He made it very plain that the laws that He gave them, the truth that He gave them, the word that He gave them, that He's the epitome of it, that's Him. It is holy. It should be treated with reverence. Nobody should have contempt for it. And that word is not done away, period, until heaven and earth shall pass. And that's the only way they can be holy. So when you come to the writings of the disciples, where they talk a lot about holiness, and members of the country church that think that they understand what they are reading when they come to these statements about holiness, and they can give eloquent sermons about it, about holiness, and they don't know what they are talking about. You see? Because all of them have one common thing among them, contempt for the law of God that determines what is it that makes you holy and what is it that is not. So when God demanded, when the disciples who have this background that we are reading here, who like Timothy, as Paul said, from a child have known the Holy Scriptures, which were able to make them wise unto salvation, you see, bring them to Jesus Christ, and by faith that would be possible for them to accomplish that, with His Spirit and help, and the Spirit of God, obviously, you see, they're not going to teach otherwise anything that is contrary to the law. And to the end of his days, that's what Paul said, that as far as the law was concerned, you see, and the proper traditions of the elders, even of the people of Judah, his own people, he said, I never transgressed any of those things. And yet, a lot of people claim that he did, and that did away with the law, and he invented a new religion. You know, they use this terminology, the Pauline doctrines, and that he's the founder of Christianity. You see, that in terms of the Gentile religion, and all these things are just hogwash, and that's what it is, unclean things. And people are filled with them, and they think that they can come before God and worship Him with vomit in their heart and in their minds and in their mouth. And this is what Moses is saying here. This is the law of God. This is what you do. He's not inventing his own things. Jesus Christ is speaking here through Moses. And so in verse 11, we continue. He says, of all the clean birds you may eat. Now he's going to tell them what is clean and what is not. And they're going to decide it on their own. But these are they which you shall not eat. The great vulture, and the bearded vulture, and the osprey, and the gled, and the falcon, and the kite after its kinds, and every raven after its kinds, and the ostrich. And people are eating ostrich. God says, don't eat it. It's unclean. And the night hawk, and the simu, and the hawk after its kinds, the little owl, the great owl, and the horned owl, and obviously all these creatures were there, all these birds were there in the land of Canaan that they were going to go into, and are going to see these things. But whether they were there or not, in whatever land on the face of the earth where these birds are, that's the law of God. And anybody or anywhere on the face of the earth who wants to be a worshiper of God, the true God and Jesus Christ, must abide by this law. This is the doctrine of Christ. He is the one speaking to Moses and through Moses. And so that's what he's saying here. And verse 16, the little owl and the great owl and the horned owl and the pelican and the carrion vulture and the cormorant and the stork and the heron after its kinds. So he enumerated every single one of them, you see. And if there are any birds that he did not, it's probably, you know, they're not going to be in the land of Canaan, so there was no need to say that. But in either case, you know, the clean ones were already mentioned. What is it that people can really eat in terms of the clean birds? So that was not an issue. You know, you can eat the dove because that's mentioned as part of the sacrifices. But there aren't really many clean birds that they could eat. And then he continues here, and the hoopoe and the bat and all winged swarming things that are unclean unto you, you shall. So he, now he's including everything else that is not unclean. And if there are some questions, what are those? You know, here is a bird I've never heard of before. What about it? Well, you go to the priest and he'll tell you, because the information is there. That becomes a part of the oral law. You see the additional creatures, because you have the basic principle by which you determine if it is or it's not. And so it says, all these things shall not be eaten. Of all clean winged things you may eat. You shall not eat of anything that dies of itself. You may give it unto the stranger that is within your gates. So if it is a cow or sheep or lamb, whatever it may be, you being holy, he said, you can't eat it. But if you've got strangers out there and they are not obedient to the law of God, you see, they are not religious. They are not people who care much about having a relationship with God, you know, but, you know, they are living there peacefully among you. And obviously there were Canaanites that were left behind and Philistines and others. You know, you give it to them. Or if you happen to be in another country, another world, another part, you know, of the world beside the land of Canaan, well, that's exactly what you can do. It's okay to sell it to the stranger, but you yourself don't eat it because you are holy. You see? If you eat that stuff, you become unholy. And God is not going to have the relationship with you until you come and are purified with a sacrifice and a sin offering. That's what all the sacrifices were about. God was not about to compromise with any detail of His law. You see? And the priests and the Levites were to teach every tiny little detail of the law of God, so nobody is ignorant. And the people of Israel were to be very much knowledgeable of the law of God. That's why it is being read to them by command from God through Moses every Sabbath day. As the Apostle James mentioned that, that way down the road, you know. We're talking about a long time after that, 1500 years in the days of the Second Temple. You see, that knowledge is still there. Nothing is lost because the Jews go to the synagogue, and that's what James says, you know. Moses commanded to be read in the synagogue. You can go over there, and, you know, there are Gentiles out there that are not being grafted into the commonwealth of Israel and are becoming Israelites. You see, they can go to the synagogue and listen, and they would know the rest of the law of God. But, you know, the issue at the time, obviously, was specific. But as for the rest, he told them, you go to the synagogue and listen to the rest. And obey it and abide by it. Because what Christ said was applicable to all. I did not come to destroy the Torah or the prophets, and heaven and earth shall pass. He's not talking only about the Jews or about the entirety of the house of Israel. He's talking about anybody who is going to have a relationship with Him must abide by this law, because this is the law that sanctifies us, that makes us holy. And without holiness, as Paul would say and others, you cannot see the Lord. No way will He accept anybody who comes to Him just, you know, after a dinner of ham and lobster and shrimp and all that, he's not going to listen to a person like that. He's not going to have a relationship with an unclean person. And you can see what happened to sincere people, devout people, good people, but they've been taught lies. They've been taught vomit, and they swallowed it, and they think it's good. And they come before Jesus Christ and worship Him every Sunday, you know, on the day of the sun. And they think that they are the people of God, and they are the true church, and, you know, they believe in that replacement theology. And the irony of it, you know, that the people that they claim they rejected Jesus Christ, and in essence they did not, because the Jesus that they follow, even though they don't know it, is the God of Israel. They just don't know that He came in the flesh. So it's sort of an identity misplacement there, and ignorance and misunderstanding. And they are the ones that kept the law of holiness, and they still do to this very day, at least the religious among them, the Orthodox among them. They don't touch anything that is unholy. And so when they come before God, they are still holy by this word. They are still being sanctified by the word. Just like this God, when He came in the flesh and prayed to His Father, the last prayer, you know, John 17, sanctify them by Your word. And here it is, people that don't believe that He is the Messiah, and yet they continue to be sanctified by the word, and others who claim to be followers of the Messiah and believe in His name are defiled and polluted, and they think that they are sanctified by the word of God. What a tragedy and irony. A lot of rude awakenings are going to occur to many people when the time comes when the King of the whole earth stands upon this earth, the Messiah, the King of Israel, Jesus Christ. And so this is what they are being told here. And the foreigner, as Moses said, you got a foreigner nearby there, you've got an animal that is dead, it's a clean animal, you don't touch it, you give it to the foreigner, it's okay. For you are a holy people unto the Lord your God. And what is it that makes you holy? The law that God gave you, the Torah, the Word of God. This is what sanctifies you. And that's why the Jew, the Orthodox Jew to this very day, anything that he does in terms of eating, drinking, whatever it may be, other things that he does in terms of the law of God, he recites that prayer, which was obviously even during the days of Jesus Christ. Blessed be Thou, God, King of the universe, that has sanctified us by Your commandments, you see, and either commanded us to do this or do that. To this very day they do it. And others who claim to be the followers of Christ despise this very word. And so God is speaking here through Moses to His people, the one that became the person, the flesh and blood, Jesus Christ. Same person. He says, you're a holy people. You don't touch it. You give it to the foreigner. You see, and if you don't touch it, much less, you can't eat it. And then he continues here, you shall not see a kid in its mother's milk, which seems to be sort of thrown in, a detail that, you know, that is not related to the others. But what is it that he's talking about here? You see, the nations of the earth, they were eating all kind of unclean things. And one of the things that they also have done, they would take, that was a custom, a kid, in other words, a goat or a sheep, whatever it may be, a few days after it is born, and either eat it or sacrifice it to their gods. Because it was very succulent at this time, very tender. And God gives them a law here. You don't do that. You see? Don't take a kid in that condition, because it's not good for the mother while he's still nursing, and it's also cruelty. And so God says, you wait until it is at least a month old, and then you can do it, but not before that. And unfortunately, people looked at it down the road, so they looked at this law, mainly rabbis, way down the road, not in the days of Moses. It was not an issue at that time or later on, many centuries. But in the days of the rabbis, you know, they began to study the law, the Pharisees, and, you know, they wanted to have a better understanding. And they did not necessarily all have the proper understanding in every case. In this case, they were mistaken. They did not understand the law of God, and they thought, well, this law means that you cannot eat milk and, in other words, dairy products and meat at the same time. Well, God had nothing to say about that at this point. This is not what he's talking about. And obviously that would not be correct For the simple reason, as we covered that earlier, when God himself, the one that became Jesus Christ, came with the two angels to Abraham, that's the kind of meal that Abraham offered him, and he ate it. He gave him all together in one meal, milk and probably cheese. That was common to do that also. And the kid that he offered before him, you see, and he ate it. And the two angels ate it too, with him. Yeah, it was a custom, you see. Milk always went with everything. And so obviously this is not what God is talking about, but why people have introduced this kind of a concept, that's people who are leaning to their own understanding, obviously, not to the Word of God, as they should. And so the whole concept of the dietary law, the kosher things, you know, are all there. And God made it very plain. In vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of man. So this passed over 2,000 years of this kind of a practice of the dietary law is all in vain. And one of these days they're going to find that out, that it was all in vain. And it is pathetic, you know, when people lean to their own understanding. And God makes it very plain. All he's talking about is that you have to be considerate. And it's not good for the milk while she's still nursing, you know, plenty of milk there, and to take away the kid from her. And it is not what God wanted, because, again, it's a question of cruelty. It's still too young. Wait, you know, for about a month. That's all he was saying here, you see. And yet, the Gentiles were doing it and didn't want them to follow the custom. It had nothing to do with dietary laws. And then we continue in verse 22. You shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed. Simple statement. That which is brought forth in the field year by year. Now this was the law. It has to do with crops. It has to do with agriculture. It has to do with the land. It has to do with the field. He's not talking about a job. You see? He's not talking about, you know, you go to work and get a paycheck. It has nothing to do with the field. It has to do with the things that God himself, by his divine nature and creation, has caused to grow in the field. You see? And so the tithing was related to the creation. The tithing was not related to artificial economy. Now, that does not mean that tithing is no more just because you live in the city and have a job and things like that, but understand the major purpose of it, the original purpose of it, and the reason for it. Because to begin with, for the entirety, with the exception of the last, you know, few centuries, the entirety of mankind was living on the land and still is, you see. Even though now a huge amount of them, great number of them, are living in cities, but still, the land's out there throughout the face of the whole earth, not in the industrial area world, you know, as it is. As much, but on the other hand, all those who live in the city, they live based on the things that are grown on the field. And so now they have the agribusiness, and only very few people are producing so much food for so many. But this law is linked to the land. And since it is to the land, obviously, everything that has to do with the tithing has to be in terms of what you grow on the land. And that's what God is saying here. And obviously you have to study the whole system of tithing. A lot of people just read the scripture here and scripture there and create doctrines around it without understanding, without studying the entirety of the subject. Why did God request the land, you know, that is the tithe? You see? What is the purpose for it? Why give it to the priesthood? What are they supposed to do? What is the responsibility? What is the entirety of the responsibility? Not just a partial responsibility. And what people that claim that they should receive the tithe must be doing, that is assuming that God called upon them to ask other people to give them the tithe, what is their responsibility? Are they doing it? Are they doing all of it? And we covered that several times as we mentioned this concept here in terms of the priesthood, the Levitical priesthood. God, in a sense, gave Israel a land. You see, he gave it to them. And he said that his eyes will be upon this land. He's going to give them rain in due season. The first rain, the latter rain, he's going to make sure that things grow nicely in the land, have, you know, things in abundance. And he made sure to begin with that every single individual family within the household, within the tribe, is going to have a piece of land, which means all of them are there living on the land that God blesses, and God produces a lot of those things. He's the one that gives the increase. They can work all they want if God doesn't send them rain, if God does not create, you know, this process that produces crops, you see, nothing will happen. And so all those things that you find in the land are directly linked to what God does, what God produces, what God creates. In contrast, obviously, to the economic system that we have today that has very little to do for the majority of people. When you have a job, it has nothing to do with the land. It has nothing to do with God. You're doing it all on your own. You see, the tithing system was not built for that purpose. But now that you find yourself in this condition, obviously you have to have to make administrative decisions there, how to continue to function and fulfill whatever responsibilities that we have within the community and toward God. But in this case, that's the entirety of the system is based on the law, based on the land, based on the creation of God, based on His blessings directly through what He does, you see, personally, in terms of the creation and Him being a creator and what He gives to the people and their spiritual needs and the people that He appoints over them and their responsibilities. And unless you study the entirety of the system, you see, whatever you're going to say about tithing is not going to be complete and would not necessarily be correct in everything that you say. And oftentimes you might even abuse it and misuse it. And a lot of people are not paying attention to that. God wants us to live by every word that proceeds out of His mouth, and to do it, you're going to have to study the whole matter. And before you begin to teach tithing or talk about tithing or you think that you understand tithing, study the entirety of the subject, everything that has to do with it, and then you proceed with this issue of the tithing, and then you're going to properly keep it and administer it and teach it and so forth. And so here he says, you shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed. That's a specific, your seed, and who created it, who made it possible for the seed to produce something, to go into the ground and die and produce something. Well, you have a part in it, in terms of the farmer, the work that you do. That's your salvation, so to speak. You know, you work your own salvation with fear and trembling. And then all that would do nothing, would produce nothing, unless God gets into the action and does His part. You see, that's a co-worker activity there. And God created to begin with. And that's basically what it is. You know, it's a natural thing there, that natural in the sense that God is involved in it. And that has to do also with the spiritual connotations there. And so it says, you tithe all the increase of your seed, that which is brought forth, and then he's specifying it. You know, where does that seed come from? It's not from the store, you see. It comes forth in the field, year by year. God makes sure that it happens. And you shall eat before your the Lord your God. You see, then you take a part of it, and you eat it before the Lord your God, in the place which He shall choose to cause His name to dwell there. So that tells you basically that God is not talking here about the portion that He gives to the Levite or to the priesthood. You see, so in essence, He's talking here about what is called the second tithe. You see, not the first one, because the first one was given to the Levites, and the next 10% from the crops that you have, from the 100%, you give already 10, you've got 90 left, you take another 10%, and God says, this is what you do with it. You're going to go to the place that God will choose. You don't choose the place. God will choose the place, and God hasn't chosen many places. Just one, you see. But then again, when you have Israel scattered throughout the whole earth, obviously, all of them cannot come to the same place all the time. So now you have administrative decisions, and they will be, you know, will be also made in the future. When the whole world is everywhere, God is not going to tell them, I want all of you to come to Jerusalem. Representative, yes. All of you stay in your place. You keep the feast, you know, wherever God is going to tell you to keep it. And He will give instructions in the future, in those terms, as He had done in the past 2,000 years. Through His people, you know, He leads them to understand certain things. Not everybody's in Jerusalem, and to begin with, for 2,000 years, there was no Jerusalem for most people to go to, no temple. And so, first understanding from the regional point of view, what it was meant to be, speaking about the land, speaking about agriculture, speaking about what God has done and is doing in the life of His people and His creation, and the temple that later on was built first. You have Shiloh in the wilderness. In essence, he told them in other places, as we read, you don't have to obey these laws because you are in the wilderness, you're in the desert, you have no crops, so that's not an issue. But when you come to the land, this is when the system kicks in. And so he says, you shall go to the place that he will choose to cause his name to dwell there. And God made it very plain, only one place was chosen. You see? People of Israel did not decide where, this place or that place. And that's what Jeroboam said, in essence. I don't care about you, God. I'm going to make my own mind, and I'll determine what the place that you chose is going to be. Well, we're going to have one calf, golden calf, in Bethel, and one in Dan. Well, God didn't choose any of those places. So all the worship of Israel, think about it, all the worship of Israel, generation after generation, because they grew into that deception. They were born into that deception, didn't know any better. They thought that literally was the place that God chose for us, we, the people of Israel, the northern kingdom. One in Dan, one in Bethel. And so they went over there, they brought their tithe over there, and they worshiped God, the kind of God that they had, and all in vain. God wasn't there. You see, so it's important to remember that. Unless God chose a certain place, He's not going to be there. Therefore, He's not going to listen to your songs and praises and worship, whatever it may be, if God is not the one that chose that place. You see? In other words, everything has to be done with God in mind, in the center of it. Is it His will? Is it what He wants? Or is it something that we invent in our own minds and leaning to our own understandings and making our own decisions and inventing our own laws teaching men those kind of things, claiming that they are from God? And God looks at that and says, it's all in vain. I didn't teach you those kind of things. I didn't say it. So we have to pay attention to what God said and not invent our own understanding. And the last person we should trust is self. Because that's the first person that is going to deceive us. Self. And then come all the others. Verse 23, it says, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place which He shall choose to cause His name to dwell there, the tithe of your corn. You see? He's not talking about your things, that you created with your own hands. Here it is, the tithe of the corn, physical things that God created, God is involved in, natural things, not man-made, God-made. Tithe of your corn, of your wine, of your oil, and of the firstlings of your herd, and of your flock. All these things God created, you see? And what God created, this is what He wants before Him. All the sacrifices that the people of Israel were to bring before Him were what? Somebody said, well, I'm a plumber, I create all kinds of things like that has to do with plumbing, or I'm an electrician, or I'm a musician, I make violins or guitars, things like that. I'm going to take a guitar and bring it to the temple and offer it to God. Well, obviously, that's not what God is interested in, with all due respect. He's not interested in your money and all the physical things that you made yourself. He wants things that He created, so to speak, with His own hands. Natural things. And that's what the tithing system was based on. The things that God created, not man. The others were different things. In terms of a society that develops in a different direction, not according to God, and they all end up in the cities, and now nobody has anything natural, and all they have is just physical things. You see? But even then, when people lived in the cities, if they went to go to the temple, God said, well, okay, you take your money, whatever you have there, and you buy natural things. And with that, you come before God and you eat and you drink and you offer sacrifices and offerings. So still, He did not compromise on that. He could not say, well, I'm not a farmer, I'm going to give you whatever I have. I'm into computers, so I'll give you a computer, I'll offer it to the priest, who'll put it on the altar. You see? He couldn't do any of those things. So let's understand that, what the tithing system is all about, what's the foundation of it, what's the basis of it, you see? And what is it we can do with God, what is it we cannot? Verse 24, he says, okay, now what are we going to do when people live far away? Well, God is going to also give you an information here. So when he tells you to bring the tithe of the corn, and of the wine, and of the oil, and the firstlings of your herd, and all your flock, you see, you do that. Why? That you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. That's the reason for it. And you do not learn to fear the Lord your God always when you do your own thing. And you say, well, God, I'm not a farmer. I'm a computer maker. I'm going to bring you a computer. God is not interested in that. He didn't create it. You see, that's man-made. He's not interested in that. So, you learn to fear God by doing the things that he told you to do, not inventing your own understanding. But, now there is an issue. What happens when you live far away? So, verse 24, God is addressing that. And if the way be too long for you, you live far away, you know, maybe in the Galilee, in the Negev, or maybe, you know, as time goes by, you live in other countries. And what do you do? What do you do then at that point? You know, here's Apostle Paul. He goes on a missionary journey. He goes to the different churches, but he still needs to go to Jerusalem during the feast. And what does he do in this case, or for that matter, anybody else? Well, he takes money with him. That's what God is going to tell us here. And when he gets to Jerusalem, this is what he does. So this is what you read here. And if the way be too long for you, so that you are not able to carry it, you know, you cannot take with you all this cattle and animals and things like that, natural things. It's a long way. You might come by sheep, by boat, whatever it may be, riding camels, or, you know, go through the wilderness if you come from Arabia. And so it says, you cannot carry it with you because the place is too far from you. That is the place that you are going to go to, Jerusalem, or the place that God chose. Before that was Shiloh, which the Lord your God shall choose to set his name there. So he's making it very specific. That's the place that you go to. The Lord your God chose that name, chose that place, put his name there. You see? You didn't go just anywhere you want. And so he says, when the Lord your God shall bless you, verse 25, this is what you do, he says, then you shall turn it into money and bind up the money in your hand, and shall go unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose. So God says, okay, in this case you take your crops, your, you know, whatever came out of the land that I myself made to grow, you know, with your little work that you did, your part, the natural things that God created, you sell it, and now you get artificial thing, money, currency, you see, dollar bill, whatever it may be, a coin, man-made. But what do you do with it? Verse 26, and you shall bestow the money, well, it says, you know, you shall go to the place, that is with the money that now you have, you shall go to the place which the Lord your God shall choose. So you still have to go to that place, now with the money, you don't have the crops, so you appear at the gate of Jerusalem, and you have no sheep and goats and produce of the land. You walk in, you know, you drive in, you ride in, whatever it may be, in contrast to others that may still be coming from nearby places, and they have their sheep with them, and a lot of those things, you know, that they bring with them, and you bring into the city. So some come with the natural things, some come with the artificial things. Those who have the natural things, no problem, they continue with it. But those who come with the artificial things, because the distance is an issue for them, well, it says, this is what you do now when you come with this money, artificial things. And you shall bestow the money for whatsoever your soul desires. And in Hebrew the word is te'aveh, which means, you know, to exact translation, whatever your soul lusts after. And we went through this concept of lusting. What does it really mean? Te'aveh comes from the word appetite, a strong desire. Has nothing to do with illicit things. I mean, they can be. All depends what's in your heart. You know, somebody can come with a knife and he can cut the vegetables with it. Another one comes with a knife and he kills you. You see, you know, it's still a knife. Has nothing to do with a knife. So it is here with this terminology of teaveh. It's what you do with it that determines whether it is legal or illicit. And so I say, whatever your soul lusts after. And notice, he is going to specify those things. Oxen, sheep, You see, for oxen, for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink. You see, a lot of people don't believe in it. They claim, you know, we are Baptists, you know, we don't drink wine. They didn't get it from the Bible. Their worship of God is vain in this area. And they're abusing the law of God in that sense. They have no respect for it. They'd rather worship God with their own doctrines than in his own. He said, well, you want to drink wine? Fine. You want to drink strong drink, liquor? Oh, it's okay too. What is not okay is when you get drunk and become a glutton, a wine beaver. You see? Well, for that, there are other laws to take care of that. That does not mean just because some people do it that you just banish and ban the whole thing and make it a religious issue. It's not. And so it says, that's what you do. Or whatsoever your soul asks of you. Speaking, again, in terms of the natural things. After all, you don't need a coin, you know, you don't need a dollar bill, you don't need a computer or guitar or whatever it may be. You see, what we eat still is exactly what God created. You see, we're stuck with that. You know, we cannot be like goats, you know, that they chew anything in sight, you know, including aluminum cans. We don't do that. We still end up eating the natural things that God created. So that's what God means here. Whatever your soul asks of you. And you shall eat there before the Lord your God. That's what you do there in the temple, or around the temple, or, you know, in your own home, right there near the temple. Not everybody can get in, obviously. And you shall rejoice, you and your household, and the Levites. In other words, the purpose of the tithe, even though you already gave a tithe to the Levite, also remember that the Levite doesn't have a land. He cannot save a second tithe. You see, so when he goes to Jerusalem at that time, during the holidays, all the Levites and the priesthood appeared before him also to serve the people. So you got to take care of him again. And you will end up basically taking care of the Levites that you know, he came up with, you know, from your own territory. You see, they traveled with you to the feast also, and continue to take care of them. And so he said, you give it also to the Levites that is within your gates. You see, he made it again specific. The Levites that are around you, that you know, they know you, you know them. Well, you go together, you go to the feast, you take care of them. You shall not forsake him, for he has no portion nor inheritance with you. You know, some would say, well, I already gave him his first tithe. You know, that shouldn't be good enough. God says no. You see, that's for the daily needs. But now for the holiday, God said, I said a special tithe for it. That's going to be the second portion of it, the tithe. And from that, he also gave to the Levite. And in other places, you read also that it's supposed to take care of others. And we're going to read it here again. And we read it before that also. And so he said, he has no inheritance, so you give it to him. At the end of every 3 years, even in the same year, you shall bring forth all the tithe of your increase, and you shall lay it up within your gates. And now people began to develop an idea here. Is it, since the first tithe is given to the Levite, and the second tithe is taken to Jerusalem, what is this one? Is it the third one, another, you know, 10%? Or is it, speaking about the tithe that you take to Jerusalem, you see? And to this very day, and obviously a lot of people have different concepts about it. Some say, oh, no, that's a separate one. Some say, and the Jewish community, they say it otherwise. For example, you read here in the commentary, speaking about this issue, and basically in the Jewish community, you know, they don't have a third tithe. They understand the tithe in a different way, the second tithe. But in this case, they read all the tithe, you see, well, that is on the third year, meaning both the first tithe and the second tithe. You see, there is no mention whatsoever of the third tithe. So on the third year, well, people say third year means third tithe. Well, it didn't say third tithe, it said third year. You know, and people like to invent their own understanding in this case, and they come up with their own concept and idea of what it really means. You know, the terminology is very plain. What is it that you do on the third year? He's not talking about the third tithe. So in verse 28, he makes it very plain. At the end of every 3 years, even in the same year, you shall bring forth all the tithes of your increase. So far he spoke only about two. The first one that you give to the Levite on a yearly basis, you see, whenever you reap the crop, you know, if it is summer crop, you give it to him. If it is winter, whenever you have animals or things like that, you know, there is a special time that you do it. That's the first tithe that he gives, you know, strictly to the Levite. From that he gives to the priesthood. And then you have the second tithe. And so in the third year, the instruction here, as the community of Israel has always understood it to this very day, this is what it means. All the tithes, speaking about the first and the second that he spoke so far, this is what you do on the third year with this first and second tithe. And some other people came and said, no, this does not mean that, it means third tithe. Well, that came later, and basically the Jewish community as a whole never had this understanding to this very day. So a lot of people, you know, pick and choose whatever they want, and sometimes you have to say, well, okay, they have an understanding, have it to yourself, that's the way you want to do it. We don't need to condemn one another because we understand it this way or that way. And sometimes we have to wait until we meet, you know, the God of heaven and earth, and he's going to explain exactly what everything that he said meant. In either case, the Pharisees, the scribes that were sitting in the seat of Moses, that Christ said, whatever they tell you to do, in accordance to the law of God, that you do. And that's the way they understood it. That's the way they understood it before that. That's the way they understand it to this very day. That on the third year, what is it that you do? You take the first tithe and the second tithe all together, you see, and you put it there at the gate. And the Levites come and take their portion, and the poor and the widows and the orphans come and take their portion, and you take your portion and you go to the feast. Because, you know, there's plenty for everybody. And, you know, and that's something you do only once every 3 years, obviously, so it's not something that you do every year. So it's a sort of an administrative thing that you do on the third year. This is what you do at this point. You take the first tithe, you take the second tithe, at least that's the understanding that has always been there. The community that kept it, that had the temple, that had this knowledge and understanding, and therefore you would think they would know better. You see? The apostles were keeping it that way, and the disciples were keeping it that way until the 4th century, even though there was no temple. The Jews that were called and their eyes were opened and were followers of Christ that continued to attend to the synagogue, they continued to do exactly the same thing. You see? And that's the way basically it was. And so it is to this very day, with the exception that some people in recent time, wanting to study the law of God and walk by it, you know, they read that and they came up with their own understanding that it's not talking about the third year, but it's talking about the third tithe. Well, God is not talking about a third tithe here. He's talking about a third year. What is it that you do on the third year? And so this is what you read here. At the end of every 3 year, even in the same year, you see, the third year, this is what you do. You shall bring forth all the tithe of your increase. First tithe and the second tithe, that's what it is understood, and shall lay it up within your gates. And the Levite, now he's the first one to come. Why? Because he's the first one is going to pick up his tithe. You see, he's the first one was supposed to come and do it. You don't let the widows in first, or the strangers, or the orphans. Let the Levite first come and pick his tithe, the one that is owed to him. And so he picks up the first tithe. And the Levite, because he has no portion, nor inheritance with you, he's the first one to pick it up. Then come the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, that are within your gates. And mind you, there aren't many of them in comparison to the entirety of the nation, so how much can they take? You see? Not much, really, when you think about it, because they go all over the land. So they just take a little bit, whatever it is. And you still have plenty left for yourself to go to the feast with. And what happens when you don't have an agrarian society? Then you begin to look upon it from a monetary point of view, and then you get a totally different picture of it and a totally different perspective, and you really don't get it properly then. And that's where the problem is with the understanding of the present day generation or the last few generations. When the whole society became a city dweller society and an economy that is artificial economy, and now you begin to scratch your head and you think about it, and you know, you develop a different understanding based on the circumstances. But as Christ told us, you know, in the beginning it was not so. Go to the beginning, find out exactly how it was done, what were the circumstances, you see. Based on that, You make the decision, not based on a totally different reality, and then you impose it on the genuine reality the way it was. And that's the nature of man, and that's why Christ said, in the beginning it was not so. So when you study the law of God, don't go to your present-day society or any time, any space of time that you are in, any generation, and impose it on the original. And that's what people do. And because of that, we're confused about this concept of the tithing today. And we have our own ideas and our own concepts. And so, God says, okay, this is what you do. The third year, you take the entirety of the tithe, the first and the second, put it in the gate, let the Levite come first, pick up his first tithe. You know, and he has to take a part of that and give it to the priest. And then let all the others, there are many of them, a few of them, comparison, they take, you know, whatever they do. But still, we have plenty left. It's not an issue. And so the stranger comes, and the fatherless, the widows, and the orphans that are within your gates. And how many are all of them? Are there within your gates? Again, not many. In a normal society, there's going to be a few of them. And they shall come, and they shall eat, and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. And we're going to stop at this point again. This is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.